Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, sparking the evolution of education choice. On this episode, senior writer Lisa Bowie talks with Brian Ray, a co-founder and president of the National Home Education Research Institute, a national nonprofit research organization based in Oregon. He has been a middle school and high school classroom teacher in public and private schools, a college professor, and is a leading international expert on homeschool research.
Today, I have with me Dr. Brian Ray. He's one of the founders and the president of the National Home Education Research Institute, a nonprofit organization that does research on homeschooling and serves as a resource for families and communities. Welcome, Dr. Ray.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Lisa.
Thanks. Well, we'll start by having you tell us just a little bit about yourself and your background. I know you're very scholarly in all these degrees, but what was your own K-12 education like?
Yeah, so I was raised in the Portland, Oregon area, and my parents put six of us children all through 12 years of Roman Catholic schooling, so grade school and high school. And I think it was from everything I can tell, since then, it was a very good academic education. So that's what it was. That's what I did. Went from there on to University of Puget Sound, and I loved animals ever since I was a child. I used to spend hours and hours watching spiders and snakes and everything. So I went up to the University of Puget Sound and got a bachelor's degree in biology, thinking maybe I'd be the next Jacques Cousteau. And then from there, I stayed out for a year, and then I went for a master's of science in zoology at Ohio University, and studying pack rats, literally, in the hills of southern Ohio. It was a great time studying pack rats and watching snakes and studying all kinds of anatomy and evolution and all those things in Ohio. And then after that, you know, I started thinking, do I want to be in a lab all my life, stuck in a lab somewhere? I really didn't like that idea. I liked the idea of being more outdoors, and I love teaching. So I was right about that time my wife and I got married, and we went back to Oregon, and she was finishing a teaching degree, and I decided to go ahead and get a teaching degree, a government certified teaching degree. That's what I did. After that, I taught for a few years in private school, junior high school, sciences and creative writing. It was a small school, so I taught a lot of different things. And then I got that hankering, that itch to be challenged again, Lisa. So I thought, well, all right, how about a doctorate? So went down to Oregon State University and spent several years there getting a PhD in science education. So that's the quick background. So I've always been around the sciences, what some people call the hard sciences, the pure sciences, and then the social sciences and the teaching. After the doctorate, went up and taught at university in Seattle and then back to Oregon. So that's kind of what happened in terms of the science and the teaching. Yeah, I mean, I like teaching. I like talking, as you'll maybe see here, okay? That's kind of what happened. But during all of that, I started hearing about, well, I'm going off the track here, aren't I? Is that okay?
Sure.
I'm going off the rails with you. So I started hearing about people who were not putting their children in school, and they were in Oregon, and they were kind of like hippies, you know, with the one-room schoolhouse. We didn't even know what to call it at the time, but they were interested in hiring somebody to help them with their children, and they wanted me to do that, but I decided not to. And that was my first taste of people who were doing what we now call homeschooling. So I'll stop there for now.
Okay. Now, you taught in public and private schools before you got involved with homeschooling. What did that show you about their similarities and differences?
Yes. Well, between public and private, or between public and private and homeschooling?
Public and private.
Oh, public and private. Okay. So I would say with public and private, you know, they both have the same basic structure. The idea that there are people who are called teachers, and they're generally licensed by the government, which means they have the approval of the government. They both have an environment where the teacher in a classroom of, say, you know, 25 to 30 students has to kind of aim a given set curriculum at some middle group, you know, maybe the average, whatever that is, like the mythical average child in a group, whether it's third grade or seventh grade or 12th grade. And the teacher's doing his or her best to make sure every child does his or her best, but it's a humongous challenge. It's really difficult. Now, some of the differences between public and private is that private tends to be more customized. There's more flexibility. The teacher can move or change a little faster, maybe on a quarter instead of a giant sundial like it takes to change in a conventional public school. So, you know, those are some of the differences. Also in private schools, these are all generalizations. In private schools, there tends to be more value consistency between the family and the school. There tends to be a closer relationship between the faculty of the school and the family. You know, so there tend to be a more relational and personal and more flexible feedback than in government or public schools. I mean, so those are the quick things that stand out to me. So in some ways, they're very similar. In other ways, they are quite different.
Now, when it came to raising your own kids, what choice did you make for their education, and why was that?
Well, the choice was, from the moment each one of them was born, they were homeschooled, and we never stopped homeschooling any of our 8 children. That's the answer.
Wow.
So we never institutionalized them, and it was a lot of work. It was very rewarding. It was a lot of fun. There were a lot of tears, a lot of successes, of course, a few failures. And then, you know, as they got older, some of them, when you get into the teens, they might go away and take a class here or there, maybe in a community college, and some of them go on to college, you know, and all those kinds of things. But, you know, we just kept doing parent-led home-based education with other families, with cooperatives, teachers who might help in this or that field. We tended to be what some people might call a relaxed homeschool family or an eclectic homeschool family. We were not highly structured. So that's how we did it. We just took advantage of all the advantages of home-based education and let it rip for many years.
Now, was that after you came in contact with the folks who were homeschooling, the ones you said were hippies?
Yes, it was. I mean, what kind of happened in there was that around the early 80s, I won't give exact dates because I don't want to get too personal about my family, but one day my wife came home from student teaching in a first grade classroom in Portland, Oregon, and she said something like, "I don't know what we're going to do, but we're never good to put them in school like that." And Lisa, that was before we'd ever heard of homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And I've met people all over the nation had similar experiences during the 80s. They didn't really know what they were going to do, but they looked at institutional schooling and thought, we're not doing that. So a lot of homeschooling has its roots in the late 70s and 80s, and that's what was going on there. So yes, I met those people down there in Corvallis, Oregon in the mid-1980s. And that was also about the time that there were some radio programs on some big Christian radio programs like Focus on the Family, where they were talking about things like homeschooling and start your children later in formal instruction than earlier, especially some of the boys, and all those kinds of things were going on and rumbling. And then the secular people were talking about school is like prison, school's like hell, it's too structured. You know, so you had people coming from very different angles who all got into the early part of the modern homeschool movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really, you hear a lot about the religion, but there are other families who were on the left who were embracing this.
Oh, absolutely. And I think this whole idea that it was only right-wing religious Christian fundamentalist Bible thumpers is, first of all, factually wrong. There were plenty of people who were coming at it from a more of a pedagogical perspective, a secular philosophical perspective. Of course, everybody is religious in one way or another, but, you know, secularism is kind of a religion. So, but anyway, they were not talking about Jesus. They were talking about their values of independence and not trying to conform all children to the same mold and not put them all under the same teaching, training, and indoctrination of state-run schools. So there were a lot of reasons why different groups, different elements, different parts of society got back into home education in the late 70s and 80s. But it was clearly a variety of people. I mean, even back in the mid-80s, when I started looking at any research, which was very little on homeschooling at the time, I was receiving those big old 9x12 manila envelopes with a metal clasp on the back. Remember those? And they had the rainbow stickers on them and all this other stuff, you know, free the kids and kids live now, and had nothing to do with what you would think of as, you know, Christianity or religion. It was very, very different. All kinds of people were homeschooling from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of the unschooling movement, which was also done at home, where kids were just allowed to pursue their interests.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the big name associated with that is John Holt, H-O-L-T. And eventually he and some others started the group, the magazine Growing Without Schooling. Well, that was the organization Growing Without Schooling, but they also had a magazine, and that ran for many, many years. And that was the orientation. They would talk about child-centered education or allowing each child as much freedom as the parents could. I don't want to say exactly how they say it, but I'll try to paraphrase them. As much freedom as the parents could tolerate or be comfortable with. And talk about as unschooling, but letting the children make a lot of choices every day in what they would pursue, their interests, their dreams, their desires. And the unschoolers are still a part of, I would call that a part of the homeschool movement. They would probably say it's different. But anyway, it is, you know, even if they might not say it's parent directed, well, of course, these children are minors, so the parents are involved. Okay. But yes, a whole variety always has been, still is in the modern homeschool movement.
So what inspired you, and how did you have time with 8 kids? to start the National Home Education Research Institute and enter that field.
Yeah. It came at a very providential time in history. So let me go back just a touch before that. Around 1984, I cannot say the exact date, 83, 84 is when I first started hearing about something that we had not yet decided to call homeschooling. But I started looking around to see if there was any research on these people who did not send their children away to institutional school. And I found a little bit. And in 1985, if you can believe it was that long ago, I started a journal called Home School Researcher. Three words. And most people know nowadays homeschooling is one word, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a little journal that I started, 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, white with Courier font stapled in the upper left corner. And I was basically reviewing research by other people, and then I'd mail it out to people all over the nation, and might have even had some people in other nations. That journal is still in existence as a peer-reviewed quarterly journal, Home School Researcher. You can find it online at our website, nheri.org. And so that was 1985. So I was watching research and I was reviewing research, and then I started doing research myself, and I realized that this thing was growing, growing, growing. This thing that we now, well, when I first started looking at the research, I called my bibliography the Home-Centered Learning Annotated Bibliography. And I still keep that going today. It has over 1,700 references in it, Lisa. So then 1990 comes along and more research is being done. And it seems like there needs to be a nonprofit think tank that does research, that collates research, that reviews research, and makes research available to the public. So that was when a few other guys and I decided to found the National Home Education Research Institute as a 501c3 nonprofit. It was just an idea. It was an inspiration. There was something that needed to be done. I was fascinated by the topic of home-based education. Philosophically, politically, pedagogically, in every way, the topic fascinates me because the raising of children is such a core foundational aspect of every single society. So we started in 1990, so it's now 32 years old.
Oh, that is that's amazing. So since you started your work with home education research, what have been some of the most interesting discoveries?
Most interesting. Well, I'd say the first one was that parents who are not government approved teachers, not state licensed teachers, have their children doing on average better than public school students on average on standardized tests. And that's even when the parents are not necessarily teaching to standardized tests. So as I look at it and as I think about it, and I've been pondering this for over 30 years, it's really not shocking. At first, it seemed interesting and maybe surprising to a lot of people. But when I throw out the H word, the homeschool word, and just ask people, like teachers, you ask teachers, ask any adult who's gone through school, when do children usually learn more? When they're a group of 25 other children, or when they're in small groups? Almost everybody says small groups. When do children learn more? When they're distracted, or when they can focus on what they're doing? When they can focus. When do children learn more? When they're in tense and maybe dangerous environments, or when they're relaxed environments? You just start going through all these elements that are in many ways systemic to home-based education. And it's interesting, but it's not shocking anymore that these children do well academically. So that was one. And that's, I always have fun trying to explain that to journalists and other people that it's not rocket science, so to speak, that they're doing well. I think the next thing that was really interesting was the whole question that so many thousands and thousands and even now millions of homeschool parents have heard and thousands and millions of homeschool students have heard, but what about socialization? You know, it's a big, they call it the S question. And now 30 or more years of research shows that, again, on average, they do better in terms of social emotional development than children in institutional schools. And again, if you start breaking it down of what really happens in a home-based environment and interacting with people outside the family, it's not shocking that they do very well socially and emotionally. Another thing that's been really interesting is that some of the negative criticisms that were lobbed at the homeschool movement for 30 years have not come true. For example, many people assumed that these children would become adults who are narrow-minded, bigoted, maybe racist. But now the research is showing it's the opposite. In fact, one study by Albert Chang showed that home-educated who are now adults are more politically tolerant than others. Really interesting, some of the things that we're finding out about the effects of and by, I'll have to say this, millennia old home education. And I think that's really important for people to remember is that homeschooling is nothing new. You know, in history, over thousands of years of human history, home-based education is the norm. It is not the minority. So when we look at history and say, hey, we had artists and we had inventors and we had businesses and we had advances and we had all these amazing music, we had all of that before the majority of children were institutionalized. So all these things keep becoming very, very interesting to me as I go along and follow the research over these decades.
Have you found anything that really did surprise you, though? You mentioned that was interesting, but not surprising.
Oh, boy.
Have you found anything that just really counter to what you thought?
That's a good one. As I look back and I think about it, let's just say something personal here first. Before I ever got into this world of research on homeschooling, I was already an alternatively minded person. Okay, so let's just set the framework there. So I was already not oriented to thinking that the normal way is the best way. So that goes back to drip irrigation in gardens. I was doing that decades before it became popular, you know, and organic gardening. My wife and I were doing that quite a while before it became very popular. We were just kind of oriented that way. Like in some ways, at least that we were pragmatists to say, hey, what works well? So, you know, let me apply that to education. Like I said, you ask almost any certified teacher, any professor of education, just any old adult, what are the elements that make for interesting learning, lifelong learning, effective learning, and the elements of that are available, I should say the elements that are available in home-based education fit that. So most of these things have not surprised me, really. I mean, the fact that they do well academically, that surprised me a little bit because these parents do not need to, do not necessarily teach to what a standardized test has on it. So that surprised me a little bit. One thing that I guess surprised me a little bit was when I would meet many parents, hundreds of parents all over the country and even in other countries, they would say, but Dr. Ray, we do not spend very much time on science. But when we give our kids a standardized test, they do well in science. And I thought, well, how would one explain that? And I think this is a hypothesis. I cannot prove this, you know, with a lot of substantive, but I think it's because home-educated children have time to, and they read a lot. So this fact that parents would tell me, we do not spend a lot of time on science or math, but our children on average do above average in science and math, I think could be explained by a lot of reading and a lot of practical life experience. So that kind of did surprise me. But as I think about it, I'm not shocked that that happened. I can't say that I've had any huge shocks about what's going on as I really think it through. Let's see, I'll just have to stop there because I cannot make up anything really right now.
What about socialization myth? Is that just because people don't know enough about home education to realize that there are all these opportunities for co-ops and interaction and field trips and all of that? Or is it because they just assume that the kid sits at the kitchen table alone all day?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to come back to your possible answers. I think it's deeper than that. Nobody bothered asking 300 years ago to parents, what about socialization? You know, families were engaged in home-based education. That is what most people did for thousands of years. I don't think people wandered around saying to Abraham Lincoln's mom and dad, but what about socialization? Or Pearl Buck's parents, what about socialization? Or all of the inventors and musicians and business people and all that who came before 1880 in the United States of America. Nobody wandered around saying, but what about socialization? What happened, Lisa, is that we had most people doing parent-led home-based education, and then institutional schooling came along and became dominant by about 1900. Let's look at America here for a minute. And even then, it was not 9 months per year, 6 hours per day with 25 children plus or minus 11 months your age. So what I'm getting at is simply because most of us today and most of us over the last 100 years experienced institutional schooling, we think the norm is best and we think the norm brings the best results. But that is fallacious thinking. The norm does not necessarily give you the best. And we all know the joke, you know, if 100 people jumped off the cliff, should you? You know, that's kind of the extreme. But I think people asked the question because that's all they knew. You know, if the fish grows up in water, it does not know anything about living on land. So it's a philosophical, experiential question. Okay, next. Practically speaking, yes, you're partly right, is that a lot of people used to have this picture that when Susie was homeschooled or Billy, they were tied to mommy's apron strings 6 hours per day until they were 25 years old. That's kind of what they thought. But it's never been like that. I was reflecting earlier back about the 1980s, the mid and late 1980s. And even then, there were where homeschool families would get together, three or four or five families would get together on Friday. They might call it Friday school or play day, or, hey, today this parent's going to teach basket weaving and that parent's going to teach biology for 1.5 hours. Then you go run around the park and play. That was going on in the late 80s, just like it is today. But a lot of people didn't know that. And also a lot of Americans do not stop to think, wait a minute, do you have to go to public school to play t-ball in the city league? No. Do you have to go to public school or Catholic school to be in Boy Scouts? No. That's not a requirement of being in Scouts or t-ball or gymnastics class. Or it's not a requirement of going to Sunday school or in the church youth group. So I think a lot of people just miss the reality that there's a lot of life that happens outside of institutional schools, even for children who go to institutional schools. So yeah, that's part of the answer too.
Yeah, I also wonder if that's a uniquely American thing, an American concern, more than in other countries, because we focus so much on recreation, socialization.
Yeah, I would not say it's unique to the United States, but a lot of places, I would say that which is most places nowadays, wherever institutional schooling dominates, people just think that that's normal and that's what everybody's got to do. But they don't stop to think, because, you know, I do this all the time in courts. I ask the question, or the attorney will ask me, hey, Dr. Ray, or I'll ask you, are there any weird kids in public school? Yes. Are there any depressed children in public schools? Yes. Are there any children in public schools who don't feel like they have any friends? Yes. Do all public school graduates go on and vote at a high rate? No. Are all public school graduates highly literate and love learning? No. You just go down the list, and we do it that way. People start to think, oh, I get it. Yeah. Institutional schooling does not necessarily make everybody happy, well-balanced, well-adjusted, and highly successful adults. We all know that. I think if we were to do a random sampling of prisoners and we statistically controlled all their demographic background variables, I have a hunch we would find a higher rate of incarceration into public school graduates than others. So we got to be careful about all the assumptions we make about what's normal and whether normal means good.
Mm-hmm. You have a response to, I know a couple of years ago, it was right around the time of the pandemic, although it wasn't really related to the pandemic, but there was a Harvard professor who criticized homeschooling quite heavily and equated it with possible child abuse.
Yes. Yeah, that was Professor Elizabeth Bartlet. And she did do that. I read every word of her article that came out that spring. And I would have to say, I'll try to be as conservative here as possible, okay? She was without empirical evidence that there is any more or less child abuse within the homeschool community. She was without empirical evidence that there is any more hiding or less hiding of child abuse within the homeschool community than the population at large. So let's put it that way. Her basic philosophical thrust, and that's what it was that if children are not under more control, governance, and watch by the government agents or government mandatory reporters, then for sure, almost for sure, they'll be more likely to be abused than other children. But again, there's no empirical evidence for that. And I will say, I happen to know that probably within the next month, two brand new, very well done research studies are coming out on that topic. So your listeners should stay tuned. And if they want to get free research news on homeschooling and probably see that before anybody else does, they should go to our website and sign up, get connected. It'll take them 17 seconds. And when that study comes out, they will hear all about that study. But I'm not at liberty right now to give you the results. But I'll just tell you at this point, from the research that we do have, there is no empirical evidence that homeschool children are at any more risk at all than those who go to institutional schools or are around mandatory reporters more. So that's what I can tell you for now. So she was very philosophical. And also in her article, there were allusions or implications that she was especially concerned about religious Christian families. But again, with no empirical evidence that there was any problem. So that's that.
Well, when that came out around the pandemic then is credited, though, for a meteoric rise in the numbers of families choosing to homeschool, especially Black families. Mm-hmm. We had a huge spike in Florida with Black families choosing to homeschool. Did the pandemic really drive that, or was some of this going on before COVID? Can you put that in perspective for us?
Yeah. Let's get the perspective. So yes, some of the growth was going on before the government lockdowns related to health So already for years and years and years, Lisa, homeschooling was growing for several years. Our official statement in our fact sheet was homeschooling has been growing by, 3 to 8% per year. And that might not sound like a lot, but that is quite a bit. That's steady growth for many years of homeschooling in terms of the number of children involved. But it was still growing right before 2 years ago. And then with all those lockdowns and all of a sudden so many people doing, we'll call it school at home, right? It was not homeschooling. It was not by choice, but it was public or private school at home. Then that did give a big boost. Absolutely, that gave a big boost to homeschooling. And it went from, I always get confused about the years. Okay, from what was last fall? That was 2021. So from the year before that to into there, homeschooling grew by at least 40%. Some people think a lot more, but I disagree with them. But regardless, it popped up really fast to at least 3.7 million K-12 children in homeschooling. By homeschooling, I mean parents who chose to do it and parent-led home-based education. Now, on top of that, there were a lot of people who had their children involved in school at home, and the exact numbers on that, nobody knows. I mean, at one point, it was almost all children in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So our official estimate is that there were about 3.7 million children 2 academic years ago. That's 2020-2021. The data for this recent year are not all available yet, so I've not yet put out an estimate on what happened this past school year. But so the short answer is already homeschooling is growing, but then all those government lockdowns gave it a giant boost. And I think what we saw was it went way up 2 school years ago. It dropped down a little bit this past year, but we're not going to know probably for another few more months exactly where we are in terms of the data.
So you're not able to tell if it's going to be a passing fad or if it's here to stay.
So I'm going to parse out that question a little bit. Passing fad homeschooling in general? No way. It's not a passing fad. As far as the giant leap in percentage of children homeschooled, that part we do not know. Okay. I think that the change from 3 years ago to the past 2 years, that accelerated change is going to result in a long-term increase in the percent of children homeschooled. I think it's clearly doing that. And there are a couple reasons for that. All of a sudden, homeschooling was growing in terms of acceleration. Then it really took off. And so what happens then is that more families have seen the fundamental benefits of home-based education. Then on top of that, Lisa, we have research that's actually been done. The more a person was home educated, him or herself, the more likely he or she will be to home educate their children. So this is going to be a generational effect and impact. Now, I also look at things as a biologist. There are limiting factors and there are growth factors in almost everything. So growth factors are the experience of home education, the benefits of home education, the flexibility of home education, the ability to pass on values to your children that you could not in public school. That's another, all these are growth factors, but there are also limiting factors. And that are things such as how many people are willing to do it, how many parents want to spend that much time with their children, how many parents are able. It's easier to home educate when you have one parent not having to work full time. How many people are willing to not have two jobs? How many people are willing to live on one job? It's hard. Okay. So how many people, it's hard when you're a single parent. So there are some limiting factors too. How many people are willing to pay their property taxes to the public school system plus pay extra for homeschool curriculum? So I'm not big on future prognostications, but I do think homeschooling as a percent of the school age population is going to continue to grow for at least several years.
Do you think it's going to be traditional or do you think it will involve micro schools? The thing that kind of morphed from the pandemic, morphed from homeschooling, micro schools and learning pods.
Yeah, well, it seems pretty clear from news stories and a little bit of research so far that we already have more of those things. So absolutely, we're seeing more of that. We're seeing more variety in terms of micro structures of the education. So, we have to define terms here. When I say homeschooling, I mean parent-led, home-based education. Where do you draw the exact line? I cannot say. But as long as the parents are the persons in charge, have the main authority over a child's education, and it's not happening most of the time at another place or under the authority of another institution, that's homeschooling. When you have a pod or a little mini school or a micro school, hey, those are just different versions of private education, which is great, So we do see more of that than we did, of course, 5 years ago. So that is another thing, though, when you think about it, like as I've watched the portion of children in government-run versus private education over the last 35 25 years, it was fairly stable, Lisa. I remember there were times 20 years ago when there was a group called Separating School and State, and they wanted all government-run education to be gone. And they said, hey, look, right now it's 13% private. And then by a couple years from now, by our promotions, we'll get it up to 15%. And then we'll get it up to 18%. And then there'll be a ball, a nucleus, a rolling snowball, and all of a sudden it'll be up to 30%. Well, it never happened. It has been fairly stable at 87% of children in government-run public schooling, and what's left? 13, how's my math? In private or non-public schooling. Will that percent change? I don't know. It seems like it's changing. But again, the data are usually, you know, a year, two or three behind reality. I don't know if it's inched up to 15, 17%. I just don't know. I don't know what reliable data we have yet. It appears from the little bit of research I see and the news stories I see that it is creeping up, so that the 87 for public is going down. So we're going to see. But yeah, you're right. It would be a lot of variations, private, you know, maybe the children in a place called school 3 days a week and at home 2 days a week. We already see that. And I think we'll see more of that.
Well, it's been a delight to have you on our podcast. Before we go, though, one more time, if you would tell people about your website and where they can sign up for research reports.
Yes, it's been great to be here. So the web address is, I will try to enunciate clearly, NHERI.org. And that stands for National Home Education Research Institute.org. You go there, it's really easy. Top right, get there at the website, and you do the old, it says something like, I don't know, it says get connected, I think. And that's what you do. It'll take you about contact, get connected, take you about 17 seconds, put in your name and email address, and you'll get free homeschool research news. And we do not send out a bunch of junk email, so don't worry about it. But if you're interested in what I've been talking about and all this facts and figures and the new study on abuse and Nicola and comparing the home educated to those in public and private schools, make sure you get on that list right away.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ray. It was a pleasure having you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'm glad you let me on. Bye, Lisa.